You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blogging community on the web. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I am back in the cozy confines of my own house. My voice is almost back. Thanks to everybody that listened to the last episode of the show. I thought it was one of our most fun ones. We had Nuggets writers from all over, BSN, Mile High Sports, Denver Stiffs, and that was a really good time. Unfortunately, I did lose my voice in Vegas. Made it very hard to do radio, to do podcasts, to do any of that stuff. So, you know, we're a little bit thin on episodes, but there's a lot to get to now because the Nuggets made a big splash in free agency, signing guard Isaiah Thomas, a former MVP candidate just two seasons ago. They have signed him to take on leadership role of that second unit, and it's a really, really, really fascinating move. They also, the Denver Nuggets have also traded away Kenneth Faried and Darrell Arthur in a massive salary dump, and I'm going to get to that. And then a little bit later in the show, I'm going to talk about what it means that this roster has now sort of taken form, taken shape, and you can see, and there's still one roster spot open. They can make another move, but it appears as though the Nuggets roster is more or less coming into focus, what they will be in this upcoming season. But let's get to it. Isaiah Thomas, 5'9", backup point guard, and he is coming in to be the backup point guard. I do not believe I would be shocked if there was any type of point guard controversy coming in. I expect a statement, you know, before too long that Jamal Murray is the guy, and it has nothing to do with any of that. He is Denver's long-term play. He earned the starting spot this last year. So I've had some people ask me, you know, what does this mean for Jamal? Isaiah Thomas is a great player. Jamal Murray is Denver's point guard. Isaiah Thomas is coming in to be a sixth man, which I think is his most natural role, is a high-level scorer off of the bench. Embraced a little bit of that in L.A. I think, you know, the connection that he has to Michael Malone, this is a Michael Malone guy. You know, I think he understands the role coming into this game. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be some questions. Fourth quarter, Isaiah Thomas opens the quarter with 8 points, 10 points. You know, does Jamal Murray go back in? Do you stick with what's working? Does Gary Harris get the bump? Does Will Barton get the bump? You know, I think those are questions that are going to pop up throughout the season, and Michael Malone will have a very, very difficult job, I think, balancing keeping everybody happy with what's the best thing to win right now in this very moment. And that's not something that Michael Malone has, you know, that's been a weakness of his as a coach, I think. You know, some of that in-game rotation decisions in the moment. So especially in moments when there was a hot hand, I think everybody remembers Jameer Nelson's game and the Emmanuel Mudiay issue a couple years back. I think it's been three seasons now when the Nuggets stuck with the same lineup for like 19 straight minutes or something to end a game and ended up losing in overtime. So there is some real legitimate questions here, but I think for me, the questions are outweighed tremendously by the upside. At Summer League, all of us Nuggets writers, and really the talk had been on Reddit and Twitter and Facebook and all these different things on Denver Stiffs comment section. What's going to happen with this bench? If you go with Monte, Malik, Torrey Craig, Trey Lyles, Mason Plumlee, that was a lot of question marks there, especially about how you score. Now with Isaiah Thomas there, you know, you put Isaiah Thomas out there with four role players, you still have a good offense. Isaiah Thomas is an offensive you know, guru. That doesn't sound right. He's not an offensive guru, but he's an offensive stud. And I think you, especially in that second unit role where he has a green light, I think he's going to be great. Playing off of Mason Plumlee is going to be great. Mason Plumlee, a really good secondary playmaker. You think about the pick and roll. One of the things I'm excited for with Isaiah Thomas, he's a very good pick and roll player and can get the ball out of his hands. As little as he is, he finds those passing angles in the pick and roll. Puts pressure on the defense as a scorer, so he gets a lot of traps and double teams. So I think for the moment he shares the court with Nikola, you're going to see Nikola really, I think his offensive game is going to take off in those moments even more so than usual. And then, you know, playing with Mason Plumlee, I think Mason Plumlee's assist numbers are going to go through the roof because he's going to be hit on that short roll so often. So I think the bench scoring question now is taken care of. Trey Lyles gets to be his natural kind of, you know, he doesn't have to worry about getting other people shots. He can just be a scorer and a playmaker. So you have Isaiah Thomas setting the table and scoring for everyone. You get Mason Plumlee back to a more natural role. When he's playing without another big, he gets to be back to his more natural role of setting the table for others on the offensive end, passing, playing the DHO and pick and roll game, rolling hard to the rim. He'll have another guy that can throw lob threats, throw the lob to him. And so it's just more natural. Then Torrey Craig off ball, not expected to create offense. Whoever they bring in to play that could be Malik Beasley, but more, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they brought somebody else in as the defensive guy there, or maybe even Michael Porter Jr. if he gets healthy at some point in the season. So I think Denver's their bench unit now no longer, I think just the one signing answered so many questions about them as a unit. So I think that's incredible. It's important to note, he was absolutely loved in the LA locker room with the Lakers. I mean, that's another young, very close-knit group. I think Denver has as close-knit a group as you see. And that was one of the stories, of Summer League, was just how many guys were out there. Let's go through the roster real quick. Jamal Murray was there, Gary Harris, Torrey Craig, obviously Malik Beasley's playing, and Monte Morris. Nikola Jokic was there. Paul Millsap was there. Trey Lyles was there. Jared Vanderbilt was there. I mean, who was not there? Wancho was not there. He was in Europe. Who else was not there? I don't know if there was another player on the roster that, yeah, I think that was everybody else. So pretty incredible for the Nuggets to have their entire squad out there supporting their young Summer League guys, and then also just to get together. It shows just how close-knit this group is, and that's been a huge focus. I think Isaiah Thomas, you know, he has a weird reputation, and I'm going to reserve doubt, both good and bad, for him, as I always like to do, until I get to observe for myself some of the interactions. But in L.A., you know, talking to Anthony Irwin, my good friend from Silver Screen and Roll, from Locked On Lakers, he was loved. Everything about it, he got along with the guys on Instagram and social media. They would poke fun at each other and have a good time. So he's a guy that I think will fit the locker room culture. He's somewhat of something of a veteran, so he can provide some of that. He was liked in the Boston locker room, maybe not to the extent of the LA one. It was really just in Cleveland where he was such a disruptor, or, you know, didn't fit in. But there were so many other things. You know, sometimes when there's multiple alphas in a room, you know, things can get tricky. And I think out there, that was LeBron's team. Isaiah Thomas wanted to come in with a force, I think, and those two guys clashed. But I don't think you can – Denver's roster is just so different, and his role on the Nuggets team is going to be so different. He was coming off an MVP season in Boston. He is now coming off of a not MVP season this last year with injuries and all of that. So I'm at least more optimistic than I am pessimistic that this is a move that is going to work out. Defensively, one of the stories of this offseason has been Denver just punting on defense, it would seem, or I would say punting on defense. Maybe you could try to argue that they're counting on their guys to improve defensively internally, which, you know, could happen. I know a couple years ago Tim Connelly told me they can count on shooting to improve internally. They don't need to add shooters. He was right about that, because Denver now, the last thing you would say is they need shooters. They got so many shooters, and a lot of that was internal improvements from Will Barton, Nikola Jokic, Gary Harris, Jamal Murray. So maybe that's the same is going to be true of the defense, and we're going to see improvements from Jokic, we're going to see improvements from Murray, Harris, even Barton. And so maybe if those guys can become average defenders or above, maybe it's not such an issue. But right now, adding Isaiah Thomas is probably now the single worst defender on the Nuggets roster. And in particular, he's going to be tough in the pick and roll, because he just doesn't have the length and size to fight through screens and contest shots. So the Jokic, Isaiah Thomas pick and roll is sort of a non-starter for Denver. Offensively, those two are going to be dynamite. I think they're going to be incredible and maybe even outweigh their defense. But I think on the defensive end, teams are going to attack that over and over and over again, especially in a playoff series. You know, I don't know that Denver's too worried at the moment about how they're going to perform in the playoffs, and Isaiah Thomas is signed to a vet minimum 1-year deal. But in a playoff series, they would attack that combination every single time. Those two would be put in the pick and roll 40 times in a single game if they were on the court for extended minutes. So that does become a serious concern. But offensively, Isaiah Thomas, I think the Nuggets might have the number one offense in the NBA next year. Honest to God, I think they might be number one. The Warriors are still out there. The Rockets are still out there. I think Denver's going to be right there. Isaiah Thomas is 8.7 offensive box plus minus in 2016-17, which is when he was with the Celtics. That was higher than anything Jokic has put up in terms of box plus minus. The guy is an absolute, I mean, offensively, he's a juggernaut. He gets to the free throw line. He finishes through contact like no other. He can shoot the three. He can shoot the mid-range. He puts so much pressure on teams on that end of the floor that I think Denver, especially at home, Denver is just going to run teams, I think, into the ground and just outscore them. It's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. Denver's offense will be absolutely incredible. Denver wasn't done making moves. They shortly after completing that deal, they have successfully offloaded $21 million in the form of Kenneth Fareed and Darrell Arthur. Both of them were on expiring deals, but they were deals that brought Denver above the luxury tax line. Denver is now below the luxury tax line, I believe, by $8 million. And they did that by sending those two players to the Brooklyn Nets, taking on I don't even remember what player was in the trade. I don't know how off the top of my head. They took on Isaiah Whitehead, who will be waived. So it was really just a salary dump type move, and Denver included in that deal a second round pick and a first round pick in 2019 that is top 12 protected. So basically, if Denver makes the playoffs, I think they should be favored to make the playoffs now. I think they're as strong as any of the contenders, really, even considering even the Lakers. I know the Lakers have LeBron, so he's sort of, when tied, you always side with LeBron James. But I think Denver is as favored as any of those other teams, Minnesota, Portland, New Orleans, to make the playoffs next year. I just think they're going to be a solid enough team now with Isaiah in the fold. So likely that pick ends up being somewhere in the 15 to 20 range. And Denver has parted with that. Now, it always is difficult trading away a first rounder. This year, that first rounder turned into Michael Porter Jr., which could be something. The 13th pick 2 years ago was Donovan Mitchell. There's players to be had in the middle of the draft. But, you know, you look at Denver's roster now, and we just talked about the young core and all these players. I think Denver is now content with their young core. I don't think they look at their roster and say, we need more youth and more young pieces. Now, it's... I learned this lesson in the Mason Plumlee trade when they traded Yusef Nurkic and a first round, how you can never have too many first rounders. Those are always either – there's multiple ways you can use them. You either draft a player and add more youth to your roster, or they just become the ultimate trade chips to move up in a draft or to move off of a player or to grab a superstar in a trade. So them not having that certainly hurts their flexibility in certain regards. But at the same time, I think that's tremendous value considering they were getting off of two enormous contracts. They now have enough room to sign one more player. They're at 14 players on the roster now, so they have a roster spot available, assuming that they keep Monte Morris on a two-way deal, which I think they will. So they have this opportunity to be flexible and get under the luxury tax, not start that repeater tax now. So I think it was a really, really great move, and the cost of that first rounder, we all kind of saw that it would cost that at some point. But if you look at the deals of Wilson Chandler going to Philadelphia and Darrell Arthur and Kenneth Fareed, you got off of a ton of money, basically half of your payroll, and they get off of it for the cost of one first rounder. I think that's pretty good. I think that's pretty tremendous. And as important of anything, you know, Kenneth Fareed was not a distraction in the locker room as far as I could tell. I'm sure he was a distraction in some ways. His attitude was never great. He was never a Yusef Nurkic, right? He still was supportive of the players. The players still loved him. He was at Summer League. Kenneth Fareed showed up to Summer League and sat courtside. So, you know, I don't think he was a major issue for this Nuggets locker room. Darrell Arthur, quite the op. I mean, he was not just was he not a distraction, he was an incredible positive. That guy, Brooklyn was smart to add a player like him because I think he's so good for young you know, rosters and just for the cohesion of the group. So, you know, that both of those guys going out, you lose a little bit of veteran presence and Denver becomes even younger. But at the end of the day, they were not in the rotation. And you can ask, you know, you've listened to the show long enough, you know that I'm a huge Kenneth Faried fan in terms of his, of what he brings to the table offensively. And I hated to see both Durrell and Kenneth Faried be guys that weren't played over the last 2 years because I think they both had some value. I wasn't super high on Durrell Arthur, but there were moments last year he could have been inserted into the lineup and wasn't. So it stinks that both of those guys had to go, but at the same time, it's kind of nice to have this roster clarity now that this is your squad. These are what they're good at. They have an identity. This is the one thing they're lacking. You got this much money to spend. All of those things are now in focus, and I think it makes for an exciting upcoming NBA season. Wrap up this episode now by talking about that roster clarity that I just alluded to. This squad, this Denver Nuggets 2018-19 squad, is just packed full of underdog stories. It's kind of amazing. I wrote this on Denver Stiffs the other day, an article. If you haven't checked it out, you need to check it out, on Michael Porter Jr. It's titled The Underdog. You can just search Denver Stiffs, The Underdog. It should pop up. In that, Michael Porter Jr. is such the anti-underdog. He's been the number one player in his class for like 6 years, since he was a little kid. He comes to Denver after all of the things that went wrong with him. 12 teams passed on him. He falls to 14. And he almost finds himself out of place as this guy that's, no, I'm the guy. I've been the guy since I was in middle school. And now it's like, hey, man, you're in Denver. You're here with the rest of the overlooked guys. And you're not going to get a lot of national coverage for it, so just embrace it, because when you come to Denver, it's very, very difficult to be the front runner. But let's go through the list. Jamal Murray has a chip on his shoulder the size of Ontario. He's the second shooting guard taken in the 2016 NBA draft. First of all, Jamal Murray is the player on the Nuggets roster the most with Mamba mentality. You know, I hate that phrase, but the most with this, like, sort of takes everything as a slight. Thinks he's the best player in the world, all of these things. I mean, that guy, if he would have gone number two, he would have had a chip on his shoulder. So the fact that he was the seventh pick, the highest pick on the Nuggets roster. But even then, what he has done over the last two seasons has been so wildly unreported. If he was with the Knicks, or if he was with the Lakers, I mean, there would be so much hype around him as the next Steph Curry or the next Damian Lillard. I think this upcoming season for him is so huge for him. I expect him to make an enormous leap, and for guys to finally start around the league to finally start taking notice. But 40-point, 3-point shooter on high volume, I think he's just in line for such a huge leap. But at the end of the day, he's in Denver. He's never going to get quite the credit that he deserves. Isaiah Thomas, the backup point guard, was the 60th pick. He was the last pick in his class. He became an MVP. Think about his roller coaster. He was an MVP candidate. Like, legitimately, this guy deserves MVP votes 2 years ago, and he is today signing for a vet minimum. He had that interview where maybe he was a little drunk, and he says, back up the Brinks truck for me in free agency. Bring it on. I'm getting my payday. Well, here we are, and his payday was the minimum. The irony to it of thinking you're getting a max to getting a minimum is just insane. So he's an underdog once again. I mean, this guy's going to be an underdog his entire life, 5'9", Earl Boykin size. Monte Morris, and this one hurts me. You know, I thought Monte had done everything that was asked for him in this summer league, and I mentioned on a pod the other day that I did not expect him to get the backup point guard job, part because I had heard about this deal, heard that there was a possibility for a deal like this to happen, to bring in a veteran point guard. But also just because you think about this logically, Malone arrives in Denver and he's handed Emmanuel Mudiay, a rookie point guard with no expectations. Second year you come in and you add Jamal Murray, but again, you're playing a rookie and a rookie as your backup and a second-year player as your starter. You got Jameer Nelson, and we know how much he loved Jameer Nelson. He played him a lot for a reason. Head coaches want a veteran in there. It's some, you know, veteran point guard of all positions. Veteran point guard is the most, like, a coach just insists on it. Then you go to even last year, you still have, now Jamal Murray's the starter, but Emmanuel Mudiay is your backup. The Nuggets front office traded away Jameer Nelson, so you had no other options. And then it gets so bad that ultimately you had to bring in Devin Harris and you had to play Will Barton as point guard. So he has not had, other than Jameer Nelson, he has not had a veteran point guard on his roster. And Malone coming into a contract year, just what were the odds he was going to say, okay, Jamal, a third-year player who's kind of a combo guard to begin with, is our starter. And then Monte Morris, who, as much as fans, I think, and even analysts loved him and loved everything they saw, just, you go into a do-or-die, make-or-break season with an unproven guy. And I just thought, almost no matter what he did in Summer League, he was never going to show enough that he could be that guy. So I feel terrible for Monte. I hope that the plan is Monte Morris is the backup point guard for 2019-20, and that this is more of a grooming year, and they always looked at him as a two-year, training him for 2 years to take on this role. I hope that's it. I also hope that his two-way contract, you know, the Nuggets have one spot available. It might be his. You know, he has one more year to be a two-way contract guy, and at the end of that, I wonder if Denver is just going to, you know, by January, just sign him onto some kind of deal as a show of good faith to say, hey, I know you haven't made a ton of money the last 2 years or last year and a half, but here's a little bit of money just to kind of say we appreciate how much you did, and we appreciate what you did in Summer League, because quite frankly, Monte Morris proved that he was a backup point guard in this league. He's in a circumstance where that, it unfortunately, Denver felt they couldn't afford to risk to prove it in the regular season, but he proved it in Summer League, and he's as much an underdog as anybody on this roster. Gary Harris was taken 19th, didn't start, hardly got any minutes his rookie season, worked his way into being a guy worth $84 million, and it's he's always going to be the ultimate underdog. Malik Beasley hasn't even gotten his shot yet. Torrey Craig went undrafted. Talk about an underdog. He wasn't even drafted. All these guys, the Nuggets have 8 second-round picks or later on, or undrafted guys on their roster. That's more than they have first-round picks, which is kind of amazing. But Torrey Craig, the ultimate underdog story. Will Barton fell all the way to 40th in the draft. You know, he was projected top 20 coming into the season. Imagine this. Think about Michael Porter Jr.'s fall. Michael Porter Jr. still gets a guaranteed contract and a lottery guaranteed contract, which is still pretty good. Will Barton thought he was a guaranteed contract, 20th pick in the draft, going to make some money. He falls all the way to 40th, and that fall has really defined his career in a lot of ways. He falls. He doesn't get the minutes on Portland, even though he probably deserves them, much to Damian Lillard has been his biggest fan for years, and he always, even back when he was in Portland, said, hey, why aren't we playing this guy? He's awesome. But because he's a second-round pick, you just don't get as many opportunities. Emmanuel Mudiay got 3 years to prove he was not an NBA player, and you just keep getting options here in Denver. Will Barton kind of proved it over and over again, but because he was such a late pick, it's like, well, we don't know. He finally gets to Denver, proves it, but he still signs a small contract. It wasn't until just this summer that he actually finally gets a big contract. And again, he's just the ultimate underdog. He just got paid. Will Barton ain't changing, man. He's still going to be that same dog. Wancho hasn't even gotten his shot yet. Michael Porter Jr., we talked about. He's being counted out by almost everybody at this moment. Paul Millsap was a 47th pick, 4-time All-Star. People still forgot. There was a thread on Reddit the other day on the NBA page of Reddit where somebody put out there, do you guys realize Paul Millsap is still on the Nuggets roster? It's like people forgot about this guy. He's a 4-time All-Star. And by the way, he's one of the best defensive players in all of the NBA. Underdog. Trey Lyles was given away and counted out. Jared Vanderbilt fell all the way to the 41st pick. Thomas Welsh, a 58th pick. Mason Plumlee is paid, but he's still, you know, an afterthought for most people. And then the face of the franchise, Nikola Jokic, a max player, but ultimately an underdog story if there ever was one, and the most underdog face of a franchise that I can remember. I mean, this team, if you can't enjoy this team, Denver has a Nuggets team that they can fully embrace and identify with. In a league that's just chock full of super teams and hype and all this stuff, Denver is now, they added Isaiah Thomas, which was almost like the cherry on top to this, them just saying, you know what, this is our squad. This is Tim Connelly's roster 100%. Now with Kenneth Fareed out of there, every player on the Nuggets roster was brought here by Tim Connelly and Josh Kroenke as well. Josh Kroenke took over the team a little bit before Tim Connelly arrived. But this is now the Tim Connelly, Josh Kroenke, Michael Malone era, and it could be the final era of that trio. But I have a feeling it'll actually be the beginning of maybe a much longer era here in, of Nuggets basketball. And it's one that I think Nuggets fans can really get behind and embrace. I'm excited for it. Really interesting news. But I'm excited to see what happens. And I'm excited just to see how Isaiah Thomas fits into this roster, both as a personality and as a player. Thanks so much for listening, guys. I will be back again tomorrow because I want to do a wrap-up of Summer League, of Denver Summer League, and kind of talk about the different players and what we saw. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.